Değil. Okay, awesome. In the interest of time, I'll go ahead and get started. Hi everyone. Thanks for joining our debrief session today. My name is Mari and I work with the CMIPB team. I'm a project manager with Bjorn's lab. Today we'll be going through some of the questions and comments that we received from you all. And I'll go to the next slide here. So we'll do a quick introduction and then we'll go through the presentation. So Sonali Basu will start us off, and then we'll have Nikki and Mahida do a presentation, and then William Gibson will also be doing a presentation. And then at the end, we'll be going through some of the feedback poll results that we kindly received and go through questions that we have for you all. So with that, quick introductions, updates, and announcements here. We wanted to let you know that regarding our first internal challenge, which was the last challenge that we had, we actually just published a paper. It's now out on Cell Reports Method. Let me also send the link of that in the chat as well. So if you could ch check it out, that'd be awesome. So yeah, and if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us or comment on our discussion forum as well. We also wanted to let you know that this current challenge, the one that you just were involved in, the paper is currently being drafted, and the tentative title is Putting Computational Models of Immunity to the Test, an Invited Challenge to Predict the Pertussis Vaccination Outcomes. So Pramod and the team is currently reviewing models submitted by the contestants. We would love for you all to be involved and credited as co-authors. And we'll send out more information in the coming weeks. So if you can look out for that, that'll be awesome. And then this next third public challenge that we'll be having, we want to let you know that we'll be announcing this in August of this year, 2024. And we would love for you all to be involved. So if you can register, if you go to the CMIPB website, we'll have all that information up there as well. Cool. And I know we're super short on time with the amount of awesome presentations that we have. So I'll stop right there for the introductions and I'll go ahead and pass it off to Sonali.
I'll share my screen. Can you see it?
We can see it well. Yes, thank you.
Right. Well, first I'd like to thank the Data Challenge organizers for arranging this project. We, besides the compelling goals you have for doing the data challenge at the University of Minnesota, it just brought the faculty and students together to participate in this data challenge. We worked as a team, and I would like to introduce my other team members, who are Michael Anderson, Chengcheng Wu, Josie Sorensen, Catherine Lee, and Bhargav Kakoti. I should say that they were really the main drivers for this data challenge and worked really hard to get this done. I'm really proud that we, with the performance and the end result, so kudos to the team. I'll go over, really briefly what we did. So a brief introduction of the data. So we had training data and test data. The training data had 2 different years of data. We had a cell frequency, multi-omic data on individuals. So we had cell frequency, gene expression, cytokine, and plasma antibody data on individuals. Using this 2020-21 data sets, we were supposed to predict the ranks using the baseline readouts for the 22 data set, which has only at the baseline data. And we
So,
don't.
just making sure, Sonali, are you advancing the slides? Because we still see the title slide.
Oh, really? Okay.
This
Yes, now
looks,
we see
yeah,
it.
this works better.
Okay. All right. So Then we had demographic data on individuals as well. What we did initially, we looked at the demographic data and wanted to make sure, and I should mention there are two vaccine groups. So we wanted to make sure that the demographic distributions, the different factors or the variables were not significantly differentially distributed between the two vaccine groups and as well as between the training and the test data. So when I looked at it, you know, there was some, the age was a little bit differential, as you can see, between the vaccine groups, but they were very similar between the training and the test data. Another thing we noticed that the race factor, there were some differential distribution between the training and the test data set. So when we built our model, we made sure again all the races were included in our training data set, training model. So given that, then we a big component of our analysis was the pre-processing steps. I mean, it's multimodal omics data, and as you know, the pre-processing steps are really important. So this is a little busy slide, but as you can see, the different modalities of the data we have here, omics data, and then when you did the data harmonization, we kept the common features for each modality. And then we saw pretty significant batch effects, and I will show you some graphs on that. So we did batch correction, we did normalization, and then we ended up including, there were some serious missingness on some of the gene features, so we excluded them. If there are 70%, they were missing, of the observations were missing, so we excluded them. And again, when we harmonized, we kept the common features. So these are the number of features that were left for each modality. And we combined these data sets, and then we have multiple time points available on each of these data sets. So again, we looked at all the time points and all the years of data. We imputed the missing observations. I will show you the slides on that. And we did time-wise imputation. And then again, we separated the training data and the test data and built our model, did the analysis. So just as I mentioned, these batch effects, as you look at the first row is the PC plots and trying to show the batch effects for the different tier data set. If you look at the RNA-seq data and cytokine, you can see pretty significant batch effects there. So we had to correct for that. And that is, see, if we don't do it, of course, that will play a big role in your prediction. So we did this batch correction, and then the corrected data looked pretty good. So we moved forward with these harmonized corrected data sets. And then we did imputation. We used a Bayesian PC approach to do the missing data imputation. It was getting pretty computationally intensive. So actually, we did imputation at each time point separately. And then the red and the black one showing you the imputed, the non-impute, or the observed data. And again, we made sure, you know, after imputation, the data doesn't look very differently distributed as opposed to the observed data. So at the end, after imputation, harmonization, normalization, we, for each of these modalities, we have this many features left. And like I said, we, for the training data, these are the two data set, 2 years we combined. They looked pretty nicely, uniformly distributed, and we built our model based on that. Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So just a quick reminder of the different tasks. The first one involving the antibody was split into two parts. We want to build a model that's capable of giving ranks based on the absolute value of the pertussis toxin antibody, but 14 days after boosting, as well as fold change from the baseline at day zero. Next slide, please. Thanks. And so then the cell frequencies task is similar in that we want to be able to predict monocytes and rank individuals based on monocyte absolute value 1 day after boosting, as well as fold change 1 day after boosting. And then finally, the CCL3 gene was selected as our biomarker for gene expression. And we wanted to be able to rank individuals and do fold change 3 days after boosting. The model that we ultimately decided to use was based on the different modalities. So the cell frequency, cytokine, antibody, and gene expression data. And we opted to use multiple co-inertial analysis, and we generated 10 predictor vectors. And we used these to generate a linear mixed effects model, which I will go into the coefficients and details shortly. And we didn't just decide to do the MCIA model. We also tested lasso, ridge, partial least squares, and principal component analysis. The way we settled on the MCI model was we combined the 2020 and 2021 data as our training data set. And we would split it roughly, say, probably like 1/5, 4/5 training and testing within that. We kept the 1/5 as our testing validation set, and we would train one of the models, so lasso or ridge or PCA. We used fivefold cross-validation to train the models, and then we used the withheld testing set from the 2020 and 2021 data to validate the models of which one seemed to be the most efficient. And we settled on MCIA as being the most robust and efficient model to be used with the linear mixed effects. And so then what we did was we took the 2020 and 2021 data combined, we built a model using MCIA and the linear mixed effects model, and then we trained our 2022 data from the baseline values. And the model that we used involved 10 different MCIA components. What we did was we separated the data based on time 0, time 1, time 3, time 7, time 14. And we took all the modalities together for a particular time point, and we would construct 10 components from the MCIA model and use those as a dimension-reduced coefficients in our linear mixed effects model. For our mixed effects model, we opted to use subject ID as our random effect because the different observations longitudinally are not independent of one another. They are clustered based on the subject. So we included that as our random effect. And then the remaining 10 MCIA components were our fixed effects that we used as beta coefficients. To handle the time point, potential time point differences, we included time as a fixed effect, as well as interactions as fixed effects between the first three MCIA components against time. And so that was how we were able to construct our linear mixed effects model. And the mathematics behind solving this was essentially just getting best linear unbiased predictors for all the different mix effects. And we were able to use the estimated beta coefficients to predict the absolute value sort of monocyte, cell frequency, antibody values for the predict or for the withheld 2022 data. And our results suggested that for the antibody, both the absolute value and the rank or sort of fold change, our Spearman correlations show that it was pretty reasonable estimates. Both our monocyte and our CCL3 absolute value expression levels were pretty reasonable, but our fold change was a little bit less than satisfactory. And that could be due to potential normality assumptions within the linear mixed effects model. So thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you both. Does anyone have any quick questions?
It's so cool. I love it. It's awesome to see it. And there's lots of questions, and we don't have the time here, right? I would love to talk about some of the details, and I'm sure others did. It's nice to see how the, multiple components of what you did were used by others as well, but I think you did my first guess is I think your pre-processing and normalization is key here to what you to the success. But anyway, sorry, I should shut up.
Thanks again. I'll put a link in the chat for the discourse. So if you have any questions, if you can post them there, that'll be awesome. Okay. With that, Nikki, if you can go up next, that'll be fantastic.
Oh, hi, everyone. Took me a while to figure this out. Can you see my screen okay?
Yeah, looks good.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, indeed. Thank you to the CMIPB team for a really interesting challenge. And well done to the University of Minnesota. It was really interesting to see how you put your model together. So I'm going to share with you my model. So I really took a data integration approach to the modeling. So just to give you kind of an idea of the concept behind the model. So we know with kind of multi-omics measures that they tend to be a little bit, there can be some random measurements in there. And we also know there can be some quite technical biases, which the previous team pointed out already. And also we want to see if we can really maximize different signals coming from multiple sources, right? And so we wanted to see if we could address this with a data integration approach. And so really, the main idea is to see if we can leverage different measures that are similar across modalities at the same time. We also hope to be able to remove some of the noise that's in the data. And another added bonus is that it's biologically interpretable. So the package that we used was MOFA, so it's multi-omics factor analysis for data integration. And very basically, it's a matrix factorization approach that takes all your different modalities and it projects them into a low dimensional space. So at the end, you have a factors by sample matrix. And then you can look at the different factors and try and understand based on their variance, where your signals are coming from and which factors are potentially interesting. In terms of the results, so we tried this two different ways. We had two different models. The first idea was to train on the 2020 data and then test on the 2021 data and then eventually try and predict the 2022 data. And then the second approach, we took the 2020 and 2021 data and we split it into a test train. I think the split was 80-20, if I remember correctly. And so we used a lasso regression approach. And our prediction features were our baseline values and our demographic information. And so that's the baseline model that you can see these gray bars representing here. And then to that baseline model, we added the top MOFA features. And then that's what you can see in these turquoise bars here. And then finally, we applied the model to the prediction task for 2022. And that's what you see in the blue. And the start, so we use the correlation as a metric, so the same as the CMIPB team did. And we can see that the MOFA factors made some tiny improvements on the baseline model. But for especially for CCL3, it seemed very predictive. So it performed really well in the actual task. And then also surprisingly, the IgG PT fold change, it performed pretty well as well. And then for the monocytes, for the absolute value of the monocyte prediction, it performed well. So in conclusion, the models predicted CCL expression well, and also the IgG PT fold change. The MOFA factors did seem to have a good effect on the models. There was still some work to do on the MOFA model itself, so I think we could probably improve the results even further. And it was also really interesting to note that there were very similar results between the 2020 and the 2021, the 2020 training and the 2020 plus 2021 training. So in this graph, I've just showed the results from the 2020 plus 2021 training, but the results from the 2020 were very similar. Yeah, so that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nikki. I'll also put the link to her discussion thread in the chat as well. Okay, awesome, thank you.
Thank you.
Makita, if whenever you're ready, if you can start screen sharing, that'd be awesome.
Hi. I'm going to do my screen.
Yeah, sounds good.
At because I'm really not the time I'm trying to make a dark card part to me. So it's a first step I took the data pre-process and preparation. And into the compound some set of specimen. And then I tried to explore the data and to utilize as much of the data as possible. So it's a first specimen that I'm and to beat and to Paris, I took the scene expression data and third type data as a set of but not all specimens at all as a data. So in order to avoid using our training data, that at first time, which is ICP prediction, only all specimens are with the antibody antibody data were selected. And third second tag, only third specimen that I'm the third type, monocytes were selected. And the third tag, third specimen that I'm the IgG gene was selected. Now, the second step, I wanted to make use of the longitudinal data. So what I did here is, I tried to adopt a time series analysis, but it was time consuming. And because the data, the processor utilized did not done enough time. So I calculated the time series between the unprocessed interest that is of the time. That is the antibody prediction task. I calculated the first between 30 and 30. And the second tag, it was the difference in the percentage of monocytes between 30 and 20. And the third one was the TPN value. So the third tag, the difference, but formulated as the first equation tag. Now, the third step was to select algorithm. And I selected categorical filtering algorithm for the supervised learning method. And I used PN1, I calculated the PN1 correlation to kind of assess the performance of the model. And now, the next step, I selected the features. It's the first step I took is the 2020 or 21 data set, and I divided them to the train and the data set. And then I trained the model using one data set and tried to train combinations of features like the vaccination status, the biological set. So I tried to put combinations of these features. And then I took the model of these data set and I calculated the correlation to be the predicted Ohmson mass. And it was repeated when I trained only on the 2020 data set and tested on the 21 data set and calculated the correlation. And likewise, the same thing was done to the 21 data set, where I trained the model of the 21 data set and tested out the 2020 data set and calculated the correlation. Now, some of these combined isolated three combinations of features then showed that we considered PN1 correlation coefficient between the three steps to limit the path at first. That was my logic. And then the dynamic model, the third
Awesome. Thank you, Mahida. And I will also post Mahida's link in the chat as well.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, next we have William, if you're able to screen share.
Yes. Oh, come on. There you go. Cool. I took kind of a different approach to this whole challenge. My big interest was trying to see what I can learn from each individual relative to the rest of the test population. So in total, I just ignored the gene expression data. Just to simplify things for myself, and went with the cell frequencies, cytokines, and plasma titers, just using the pre-processed data across both data sets. So what I did was for each subject, I would create a random forest classifier where the output was, or where the model was trained on every other individual across the data sets, and the output was classifying whether the input individual was ranked higher or lower than the random forest that was based off of that one subject. So what I ended up getting is that for each subject, I had a random forest model that was used to rank every other individual in the study. And I just thought this was an interesting approach because I could then go into each individual and see, okay, how are their trees constructed and what features are they using to rank other people relative to themselves? So from here, I then combined the prediction. So it would be either a input individual either ranked higher or lower using just their baseline features. And then I would combine that with the tree's self-predicted probability, which is just based on the number of votes that each feature got in those trees. So and I played around with the scaling of the probability for how much that impacted, I guess, how important the vote was for each model. So what I ended up with was a matrix where for each input subject, each model would have a vote, whether it's ranked higher or lower than that individual. And then that was scaled by the self-predicted probability of that tree. Now, from here, my thought was, okay, I can use XGBoost or another algorithm just to try and figure out which individuals were good predictors and which were bad. Because my hypothesis is that some individuals are good at predicting how to rank other individuals that are in kind of a similar class of response. But overall, there is not going to be a single shared modality. So sometimes a individual model would be able to predict really accurately whether someone's higher or lower. And sometimes that individual model would predict really poorly. After using XGBoost to look at my matrix and kind of spit out a prediction based off kind of the quorum of my models, I got a kind of middling, like low to decent Spearman correlations for the four tests or the three tests I attempted, which is the IgGs and the monocytes. Now, for the monocyte fold change, that was really interesting because I get a really strongly negative Spearman correlation. So my model was doing a really good job at predicted the exact opposite of who is ranked high and who is ranked low. So afterwards, I went back and revisited how my XGBoost was looking at my matrix. And basically, it was taking all the really bad predictors and valuing them really highly. And all the good predictors were being valued really low. So it was kind of, it was pulling a nice little, you know, Uno swap on me. But I think overall, just kind of poking around in each of these individual trees, I learned a lot about how individuals were responding differently. And I think going forward, this kind of gives me more ideas of, you know, how there's, you know, maybe not a single modality or maybe there's kind of multiple ways that people can be responding, but how you can kind of use each of these individual responses to, build towards a prediction based off of what your input is, kind of depending on your different response groups. But yeah, that was that was it for me. So if anyone has questions, feel free to send me a chat. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. And I will, in the interest of time, I'll just go ahead and share my screen. Okay, great. So thank you everyone for all your the presentations. And if you have any questions, again, please use the links in the chat. We also wanted to let you know, we had specific questions that we had through the feedback poll that you all kindly gave us input on. So I wanted to summarize that quickly here. So the first question, or one of the questions that we asked was, how helpful were the resources and tools provided during the CMIPB challenge? What people said was the most useful were the direct communications, and the CMIPB website was also useful, while Zoom information sessions were maybe not as useful, and we'll have a question later in the session, but just to summarize that here. And then we also wanted to know how you would rate the difficulty level of the tasks, one being very difficult and six being very simple. It was averaging around 3.22. So that was our goal in doing that. So that's great to hear. Wasn't too crazy hard or too crazy easy. We also asked how clear the information was on the CMIPB website. And the average was a 4.94 with one being very unclear. So definitely room for improvement, which is why we're having this session and we'd love to hear your feedback. So yeah. And then next, which was really great to hear. So we asked how likely were you to participate in a similar challenge in the future? So people reported that they would be very likely to participate again. So people that presented and those that you see on the call, you probably see involved again. So if you wanted to collaborate with each other, discuss each other there on the discussion forum, I think that'd be a great idea. And then we also asked at the very end how people would rate their overall experience with the prediction challenge. And people overall said that they were very satisfied, which is great to hear. And so we really appreciate everything that you've done throughout the second challenge. So with that, we had a couple questions here. So the first one we had, we wanted to know how we can make the Zoom sessions better. We got feedback, maybe we can make the Zoom sessions more available by having them live on YouTube to increase accessibility. We thought of maybe even having, you know, maybe another Zoom session where it's just purely updates and Q&A. And we also thought maybe it'd be useful to have an open office hour if you ever, you know, had a professor that would have open office hours where you can ask any questions about your particular model and stuff. But yeah, does anyone have any particular feedback or comments about these?
Sorry, Mari, to interrupt, but like, and I think I should have like done like a minute introduction here. So for, this is the first time we did this with people who are not part of whatever our grants and stuff. So and we do want to continue doing it, right? So the reason why we're asking these questions is primarily because we want to do a better job going forward. I thought as Mari was presenting, it was already pretty good, but obviously we can improve, and there were some things we did terribly wrong. I hope we adjusted most of those. The reason why this is our last kind of invited challenge where we have a small number of people, you guys here on the call, and we are planning for another one in August, where then we would have hopefully 100 people or so, 100 teams joining, and then it's going to be much harder to do some of the things like the direct feedback, right? It's not going to work. We can't scale it up, and there was overall like I think massive success here in terms of like what could be the fact the very different models that made First and then William's really unique approach. I thought that was really really cool. So I guess like that's why we're asking, and I would love any kind of feedback on what you think, how we can do better, and Mari was pointing out here like the Zoom being the first one.
Yeah, if you could unmute yourself and chime in, that'd be awesome.
I can get us started on this front. I guess my biggest advice for the beginning is the Solution Center is so helpful. And maybe at the beginning, when somebody submits direct feedback and you can in the first Zoom meeting, just tell them, here is, you know, Pramod literally taking this question and putting it on the Solution Center. And when he does that, he sees that, oh, another person already asked this question. And just going through that process, I think it will both enable people to use that resource very effectively early on and make a big difference.
Thanks, Tal. That's really helpful. Anything else? And if not, we can go forward because I know we have a couple more questions here. Okay. If anything comes up later, if you can email me or put it in the discussion forum, that'd be awesome. Cool. There were a couple, on the free response section, people commenting about the valuation metrics. So we wanted to bring it up here. So for the second challenge, we had a point system, as you might be very well aware. So for a completion of a task, we gave the participants 1 point, and then the winner of each task got 3 points. So with that and kind of getting the feedback and hearing from other people, we had also wanted to propose a revised point system for our next public challenge. So you have two options here. So option one, the winner would get 4 points, and then and a 98% confidence interval of the winner would also get 3 points. And then if the result was significant, 2 points. And then if they submitted the task, they get 1 point. So the maximum per task for option one would be 4. We also got feedback that maybe the top two rows here maybe should have more weight to it. So we would multiply that by 2. So the winner would get 8 points. And then the second line item, instead of 3, would get 6 points. And then so the total maximum per task with option two would be 8. So yeah, we wanted to open it up. Do you have any thoughts, comments? Did you like how it was this last time? Or do you have any thoughts about option one or two?
I have a question. So there were definitely tasks that were harder for than others. Like there were tasks that nobody got right, and there were tasks everybody got right. Will the tasks have, or have you thought about the tasks having different weights based on how hard they are? Well, not based on how hard they are, because that should be based on how many people got it right. So what I'm asking is the different weights for different tasks, because they some tasks can be much harder.
Prabhu, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. I think it's really difficult. I like first challenge we just to give you a big brief background on like how we selected tasks. So in the first challenge we started with the 14 tasks, and then there was a question like which tasks to be put forward, and then we picked which are not very obvious but which can be predicted well and for which we have like good data to represent those tasks and those predictors. So we ended up selecting top three tasks, not top three, like the best three tasks. In a way, we understand the pertussis biology. And then there were another kind of nice suggestion was that can we include fold changes instead of directly asking the what happens at the endpoints? And that's why we ended up like adding fold changes. And maybe that led to have like some tasks like really complex to predict and some are not in different ways. Yeah, so this is the setup we have right now, and it's good to hear about like weighted system according to the task predictions. But we need to think about this. But yeah, we don't have like quick answer at the moment.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Thanks, Rafael.
Yeah.
I think the idea of having like points distributed across, you know, in that case where there are a lot of people that are doing really well at a task versus ones that, yeah, like no one gets right or like one team is able to get right. I think that can be a good idea, but it's also just difficult to see which tasks are going to be harder at the onset. I'm not exactly sure how you evaluate that, but I think in general, though, having kind of a stronger weighting, so like this option two might be better. Though I did see like a couple of the top teams were all very close in terms of their Spearman correlations. So that was cool to see that a lot of models were very close, and it would be nice to see. Teams getting rewarded for being second place in a category or something.
Yeah, second. Yeah. Awesome, thank you. Anything else? And thanks for putting your thoughts into the chat as well. So it sounds like option two is more popular here.
Go for it, Julie.
No, go for it, Karen.
I'll be quick. Just one quick thought as well. And kudos again to you guys for coming up with the point schema. It's really difficult to quantify these things. One thing that we are doing as well is that we're summing across all the tasks, right? Where we're not really celebrating potentially if one model did well biologically on like the CCL, on like the gene expression data, right? Maybe it could also be an idea to separate different categories, and then that would kind of take care of the difficulty task metric, because I thought that comment was very valuable. So just one thought as well.
Thanks, Jeremy. And Julie, what were you going to say?
Kind of the same, actually. I was just wondering whether, yeah, there is like an overall winner that does well in all the tasks, but maybe a team does particularly well on only one task, but not so good in the remaining. So in the end, they don't get to win, but should they get rewarded for having done really well at one task?
Awesome.
And maybe actually also like the reason why we're asking you guys this is because when we wrote the whole thing, we thought, okay, as long as we have a metric of what is a good prediction, we're all good, right? And then we realized we have a really hard time of now comparing, and people do want to know. It's unfortunately, it's a very human thing to want to have rankings and stuff, right? And so Yeah, and it is important. So yeah, that's why we're doing this, and this makes a lot of sense. And then, yeah. Thank you for commenting.
Thanks. Okay, we'll move on to the next question for now. So our next one, we wanted to also get your thoughts on how we can engage more people for our third in public challenge. So for this round, we went around and identified researchers from different scientific publications and sent them invitations individually. One of the key issues that we saw when people would come back to us individually, you know, people said they would be interested, but didn't have the resources, you know, personnel, time to participate, which seemed like the main, you know, email that we would get. But the next round, we were hoping to reach out to the same people. Maybe we'd do more reach out through social media. Pramod is going to different conferences to also engage more people. But does anyone have any ideas or thoughts on how we can, you know, have people get involved? If you, you know, what helped you get engaged and involved, and what was, you know, interesting to you?
I can start this off. So I think one thing that one thing about like separating out the competitions and maybe like the easy, medium, and hard tier to kind of put in perspective is, you know, telling people it's okay to participate in one tier and kind of giving people like a low level of engagement necessary test or task. Because I found that, you know, like I was just a person doing this, you know, for fun in my free time. And I was originally just looking at the IGGs. But as I got into it, I was like, oh, well, I want to do more and more. So I think the idea of kind of, you know, maybe laying the breadcrumbs of giving some people multiple tasks that have like different prize layouts could entice people if that kind of makes sense or tracks.
Would you say like dividing into like, oh, this is like a low commitment level group and then having prizes for that, or like a,
and then I thought exactly. It's like, you know, I feel like the RNA-seq prediction challenge was maybe pretty daunting to, you know, some people like myself who aren't experts in RNA-seq. But, you know, having like other smaller challenges where, you know, maybe the requirements are very basic, that, you know, that could be an entryway for people to then get further involved. Because, you know, they spend a little bit of time with the first part of the contest, and then they say, maybe I can do these other parts. And that could just be one way to get kind of the broader population involved.
Thank you. Yeah. Bjorn, were you going to say something?
Nothing that useful. I thought, I mean, the idea of like breadcrumbs in terms of like, you know, looping people in with something, I thought that was the main point that William was making. And what's easy for some, actually, for many people, RNA-seq is going to be the simplest, because that's what everybody has the tools for who's done bioinformatics courses, and they don't actually understand. And you chose like cell frequencies, and other people are scared by that. So for some people, what you consider easy is difficult for someone else, right? But the idea of drawing people in and then, you know, expanding and not asking them to understand everything and making sure like that, yes, if you only do this one thing, it's super cool. That would be awesome.
Thank you. And Mihira, thank you for your comment in the chat about the CASPIN CAPRI competitions. We'll definitely look into that. Thank you. And also, since you are all people that engage and were participating, if you know of people from your lab or your university or institute that, you know, they might find this interesting, if you could also share that, I think that would be of big help for us. So, okay. And then the last question, and most importantly, we wanted to ask, what did not work for you that was not captured in the feedback pool? You know, what could we from the CMIPB team do better? You know, this is, we just want to know, you know, what worked, what didn't work. Yeah, if you can unmute yourself and chime in, that'll be great.
I can get the ball rolling here, I think. So one thing, again, having participated on both the first and the second, is that I think it's less about a person and specifically what someone's doing, but it would be interesting to know about the tasks going forward and what we've learned and what tasks we want to pursue, I think, in the next one. I saw a question about the difficulty of tasks, but I'm curious, do we plan to use the same? Is this still up for consideration, which tasks we're going to use going forward for next year? And I really like this idea of difficulty and using the knowledge, right, of these different years in that. So will that be incorporated, do you think, into the development of next year's tasks?
That's a really good point. I didn't think of that. Obviously, because difficulty, we can now quantify and say, like, how did people perform last time, right? We have a difficulty based on last year. Also, another thing that hasn't come up yet, but this time around, we're going to have a lot more participants. That was another concern that based on our relatively small number of study participants, we're going to have lots more data. So the differences in whatever correlations or so are going to be a little bit more meaningful. I think, Jeremy, you're right, and we should be pointing out for some of these. I mean, at minimally, we can say that these kinds of tasks performed were solved really well by these models. Try to improve on them versus these other ones were not really, right? I think that would be really cool. What do others think?
You know, I really love the diversity of the approaches we just heard about, right? It was really energizing to hear, you know, how William was doing it and the thoughts that he had and how the Minnesota team was doing it, you know, and there was a large number of similar methods taken. So a real strength is not funneling everyone down the same route in some way. So maybe not doing that as well, right?
Yeah, I had a suggestion. So my thought is, you know, people, when they come, maybe they don't know too much about pertussis, and maybe really making the participants understand, like, you know, there's other types of diseases that are similar. And, you know, you're providing, like, cytokine level sequences, providing a way for them to really understand, to see the biology with their eyes and say, wow, this cytokine level is helping prevent, let's say, influenza, or helping when you do get influenza, how does it improve your immunity? I think people, if they had, maybe this is more related to the Zoom, but really being able to see that, what part of the data, you know, which signals, which cytokines would they, how are they working, and how are they providing that boost in immunity, or just help with immunity? I think people, maybe it could be whether the content on the website or like a YouTube video or a Zoom information, maybe people connect a little bit more to this idea of they really feel like the data is connected to, you know, improving health, something like that. And maybe tailoring it to people, are you interested in health and trying to solve it? And maybe for those who are more like data science focused, you can really try to make sure people understand this is kind of like a Kaggle. You're not going to say I'm putting on Kaggle, but really making them understand this is for anybody to join.
Yeah. Thanks, Joaquin, for all the input. Yeah, I think that we have very simplified data and the description about each aspect of competition on the website. But yeah, after your comments, I feel like there is a more way to go about it. Thanks.
Any other comments, feedback?
So I wonder if we could talk a little bit about, you know, the kind of harmonization and the batch effects that were processed differently by different teams. Is that where the secret sauce lies rather than the method afterwards? Or is it, you know, is everyone starting from the same point, or are we all going in from different starting points?
It would be really fun to compare different models against the same harmonized data and see how that does, like from the winning team, for example.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when Anna, in the first challenge, she used this normalized data. It really seemed to help quite a lot. And then again, we see the winner with really highly normalized, corrected data. I think, yeah, we absolutely need to try to see if the different models, how they would perform with that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I should say, like the 2022 data you added, there was strong batch effect. It was not that strong in the previous year data sets, but this one definitely needed the batch correction. So that could be it, you know.
Anything else?
One thing that I'd like to comment on is, so I work with Barry, and we had a couple of master's students in data science that, you know, worked together. And I think one huge hurdle that we had to go over was actually explaining kind of what genes are and stuff like that. And so I really resonate with what Virat had mentioned about kind of increasing the accessibility of the resources. And so while a lot of the explanations were relatively simplified, I think even going further in order to engage kind of like data science students, the broader community, I think is very, very helpful. Yeah.
Do you think there's a preference on those kind of resources? Do you think if we delve more into the website, that would be okay? Or do you think what would be the most helpful?
I'm speaking for myself here, but I think a combination of videos, like multimedia and writing on the website is very helpful. I think, you know, that diversity and the way you communicate the basic science is really important to not keep it too dry.
Cool. Thank you. That's helpful. Okay. And thank you for all the chat comments too. I'll definitely... we'll definitely, as a team, look through everything. But with that, does anyone have any last questions? So again, we'll be announcing our public challenge in around August 2024, and we'll be emailing everyone here. We'll also be doing some outreach activities through our different outlets here, social media, conferences. And if you, again, know of any people that would be interested, please have them register on the CMIPD website so we can send them all the information. So, awesome. Again, thank you so much for your participation. And thanks to the CMIPD team and the consortium. It was a big effort. So thank you, everyone, for all your work.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for joining.
Thank you very much.
We'll be uploading this onto Discord. So if anyone missed it, feel free to send it to them.
Cool.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah.